Good morning. This is Father's Day in the United States, and I've already received cards and well wishes from friends. So I'm having a pretty good Sunday. We are continuing our study of the Art of Spiritual Healing, and we're on Chapter 8. The treatment is a realization of omnipresence. This chapter has to do with consciousness. It's all about consciousness. And let's just jump right in. Many people are puzzled as to how the patient, rather than 100 million other people, receives the benefit of a treatment if it is not necessary to know his name or even his condition, and if neither of these is taken into a treatment. The answer is found in the basic principle of oneness. The particular patient who has asked for help receives that help because he has reached out to the consciousness of the practitioner, who understands that there is not a patient consciousness, a practitioner consciousness, and a God consciousness. There is only one consciousness, God consciousness. When a patient turns to a truly dedicated God conscious practitioner, he makes himself a part of that practitioner's God consciousness. Strangely enough, a person who does not bring himself into this consciousness may sit with his ills in the same room, right next to the practitioner, year in and year out, and receive no benefit. That should make you ponder. Jesus walked up and down the Holy Land for 3 years, every day encountering the sick and the sinning, but only to those who came to him begging, "Master, Master, heal me," did he turn and say, "Believe that I can do this?" Only those who brought themselves into the consciousness of the Master, only those who were a part of the multitude that sat at his feet, only they received the benediction of his great blessing. Now here's a question. Should treatment be withheld until help has been specifically requested? What about those in the world you see around you who are in need of healing? The answer? No treatment is ever given to anyone or to any condition. See, we're still thinking in terms of healing this person, healing that condition over there. No treatment is ever given to any person, to any condition. As you move about this world, inevitably aware of its frustrations and tragedies, you never treat anyone or any condition. Never. It is the claim that is presented to you that receives the treatment, and that claim is always the belief in a self or a condition separate and apart from God. So that would mean we're treating the same thing every time, wouldn't it? A belief in a self or a condition apart from God. When you see what looks like deformity, insanity, or an accident, go within. Realize that this which you are witnessing is an illusion. Feel the divine peace of God's presence. Every specific claim that presents itself to you has to be met in your consciousness, not only when people ask you for help. If you walk along the street and see an intoxicated person, that is a claim impinging on your consciousness, and it is in your consciousness that it must be met. If you see a crippled person, if you see a beggar, do not ignore him, do not pass him by. Do not be like those who pass by the man on the road to Jericho and let him lie there. Do not let him lie there, physically. You may pass him by, but spiritually lift him right up to the truth of being. Now, you will reach a place where, because of your many meditations, you're able to turn within and almost instantly feel that presence. When that becomes your experience, you no longer need words or thoughts. You can do what he says here. Spiritually lift him right up to the truth of being, and you'll discover words are not necessary. Just discern God, God's presence. Now he gives an example. Some years ago in Honolulu, a young woman in one of our classes who was taking a bus home had her attention attracted to a man at the rear of the bus, very boisterous and obscene in his language. She immediately began to realize that God was manifest as individual being, that each individual includes all that God is, and that individual being has only the qualities of God. She did not treat the man. She did not know the truth about the man or the condition. She began with herself. And finally, he came over and said, "Thank you, miss, for praying for me. I'm all right now." You cannot pass by or ignore people who are sick, sinful, or dying. You cannot evade your responsibility to lift them up in your consciousness through the realization of the infinite nature of God appearing as individual being. If there is any degree of receptivity, they will feel it. That is how you bless your neighbor as yourself and pray for your enemies. So now, are you praying for your enemies? Really? If we enter the world of politics and the upcoming election for the President of the United States, are you able to lift your enemy? Because that's what he's saying right here. He's saying it is your responsibility. To lift them in your consciousness through the realization of the infinite nature of God appearing as individual being. That is how you pray for your enemies. Do you do that? When someone comes on your TV set, if you happen to have it turned to the news, and tells you that there's a man in the East, let's say in the state of Iran, the country, and he's hurling insults at the United States? Are you doing your responsibility? Are you lifting them up? Are you praying for your enemies? How can you call yourself a follower of Christ if you're not practicing the principles that he has laid down for us to practice? I didn't say it was easy. I said it was necessary. It is your responsibility. Now, listen to this. Your enemy is never a person. Your enemy is always an appearance. Every appearance of sin, disease, discord, lack, and limitation. So your enemy is an appearance. Am I telling you to pray for an appearance? No. I'm telling you to realize the truth where the appearance appears to be. You lift up the truth. You don't lift up the appearance. So when you know the truth about God appearing as individual being, you're lifting up the truth right there, where the appearance is showing you someone wishing to do you harm. It's very interesting, this walk in spirit that we are involved in. Now, he says, it cannot be emphasized too strongly, however, that every individual has the right to his own life and the right to his own death. He has the right to be healthy, and he has just as much right to be sick. He has as much right to seek his health through medicine as any other person has to seek it through God. The medically minded person does not relish having truth shoved down his throat by his metaphysical friends, any more than does the one who seeks his health and harmony through spiritual wisdom or truth like to have his friends or members of his family interfering with him and attempting to dissuade him from his course. Yes, we learn to walk right down the center line, people on both sides, with our finger to our lips. No one knows what we're realizing within. And this is something that really must be done. All right. Therefore, the person who believes in and practices spiritual healing must be extremely careful that he accords to all others the same freedom which he desires for himself. All things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. And if anyone wants to use medicine, surgery, or any other form of material aid, he has a right to it, and he should be set free to find his good in his own way. When we started, many of us, when we started on this journey, on this path, we wanted to go out and tell everybody, didn't we? And sometimes we did, and they were not interested. That hurt our little feelings. Eventually we came to see, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be silent. Silence is a great principle. And then if they ask, I can tell them, or I can show them a book, give them a tape, whatever. in cases where one's demonstration affects another's, where a parent, husband, wife, or child is involved, it is not only the right, but the duty and privilege of the metaphysical student to know the truth and attain his own peace through realization of God. Whether or not it frees those close to him is another thing. Sometimes it does, and sometimes it does not. Sometimes it opens up in them a desire for freedom, even for spiritual freedom. But whether or not it does that, by abiding in the truth, he has done all that he can do. Always there must be a measure of receptivity before a person can receive help. That grain of faith, do you believe that this can be done? The name, face, body, or anything which would identify the patient or the disease does not enter the thought of the practitioner of spiritual healing. See, we go back to consciousness. We don't need a person's name. We don't need to know the disease or the problem or the condition. We only need to say, yes, I will help you, and then turn within our consciousness and listen and be receptive until we feel that inner movement, until the Father speaks. So that is a movement in consciousness. However, he says, if a person telephones a practitioner to the effect that he is suffering from influenza, the treatment might be specific to the extent of dealing with the belief in infection or contagion, or the world belief in weather or climate, but not in the sense of thinking specifically of the patient or the disease. To that extent, he would be specific, but never would he be specific to the extent of treating a broken leg or an arm, or a pain, whether on the right side or the left side, up or down. A person might have a pain in the region of the heart, and yet not have heart trouble at all. Would it not be foolish, then, to attempt to treat the heart? It would make no difference if 3 or 300 people asked for help the same day. The process would always be the same. The moment an individual asks for help, that is when he and nobody else receives the treatment. Now, if you are having these 2-minute meditations several times a day, you may have a pretty good conscious contact with God, or of God. That would make a difference, because then when a person reaches out for help, they receive it, because you're already connected up, so to speak. So it all has to do with your consciousness. What level is your consciousness? Is it down here on planet Earth, and are you dealing with all these problems and judgments and criticisms and beliefs and fears and hates and even love of things? Or has it risen? He is risen means consciousness is risen. Actually, the treatment must be given the very moment a patient comes to his thought, whether that is by telephone, letter, telegraph, email, text, or whether suddenly the thought of the patient comes into his mind. At that instant, the treatment takes place, and not 1 minute later. If somebody should come into my thought this very minute while I'm writing this book, he would receive a treatment immediately. I would not dare to wait even 1 minute to give the treatment, because there is only one time to correct the belief, and that is when it comes to me. That is the time for reinterpretation or unfoldment. The secret of healing is in reaction, in this immediate reinterpretation. Now, if your consciousness is risen and someone sends you an email or a text, it touches that risen consciousness. It touches that higher consciousness. Otherwise, the minute you receive an email, you put down whatever you're doing, close your eyes, and give a treatment. You're not treating the person. You're not treating the condition. You're treating the appearance that's being presented to you, the claim. So there's no such thing as making a list of people asking for help and then sitting down at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the evening and taking care of your list. That won't do. It has to be immediate. It has to be with each case presented. It is the obligation of a practitioner to stand by with the case and to continue to work until he has achieved a feeling of release. You're released. You can feel it. Or until the patient has asked him to discontinue the work. It is the function of the practitioner to give the patient help, but after he has given it and has felt a sense of release, he must assume that the burden is on God's shoulder and that it has been taken care of. Unless it comes back to his thought, or unless he is asked for help again, he should drop it. Drop the case. It is not as if the practitioner were really trying to heal something when he is asked for help. The help he is expected to give is the realization that such conditions do not exist as reality. Did you know that was the help you were supposed to give? Such things do not exist as reality. That is the reason he does not have to feel under the necessity of giving another treatment tomorrow. If the error does not exist today, it should not exist tomorrow. And furthermore, any error which does not exist today could not have existed yesterday. That is the reason why people at great distances frequently receive their help before I receive their request for help. Ah, he's living in this higher consciousness, isn't he? He's practicing it 24/7. And, let me say further, he's still living in this higher consciousness. And anyone, anywhere, reaching out to that consciousness will receive help. Because that consciousness is my consciousness. That consciousness is your consciousness. That consciousness is God consciousness. Every day I remind myself that any error that is not true today was not true yesterday, and if it were not true yesterday, it was not true at the time the request for help was made, was sent. I live always in the realization that this is the only moment, and the harmony that exists this moment is an eternal harmony, which has always existed and always will exist. As I abide in that consciousness, everyone who reaches out to me for help must receive it, and he must receive it at the moment that he reaches out, since that is when I am knowing the truth. It's fascinating, isn't it? Throughout the years of my practice, he says, I have handled many, many cases a day. 1 year, I averaged 135 calls a day, 7 days a week, and never did I have a list of patients to treat. When a letter came, the help was given, and the person and the problem forgotten, unless it came back to mind or unless he wrote again. When a call for help comes, I take the position that this is the day the Lord hath made, and this is the moment in which I do the work. If the patient drops from thought, that is the end of it. But if he keeps returning to my thought, each time the treatment will be the highest one I know. Every day, however, I do what might be considered group work, because morning and night I realize that anyone anywhere or any time reaching out to my consciousness does not have to wait to communicate with me personally, but he must receive his answer instantaneously. All that is necessary is to reach out and the answer will come. You see how he's dwelling in that higher consciousness? Think of that. He's maybe sitting in his office in Hawaii, and he's knowing the truth, this truth. Anyone anywhere reaching out receives their help. They don't have to contact me personally. And while he's doing that, you're reaching out for help. Maybe just a quick prayer. Maybe you wrote a letter. Sent it off. Point is, he was in that higher consciousness, so that when anyone touched him, reached out to him, they touched that higher consciousness, which is God consciousness. I am not thinking of any specific individual. I'm not thinking of 30, 40, or 100 individual people, but of a patient body or a student body. In going into meditation for such a group, which I do many, many times a day, I would not take 40 or 100 different people into consciousness. I would merely know that as a group, they are not affected by world beliefs or suggestions. My meditations would be wholly centered on God and the principle involved, which is that God is the consciousness of individual being. There is only one presence, one power, one consciousness, and that God consciousness is the consciousness of the group. It is through such daily meditation periods, in which many of us in the infinite way embrace in our consciousness all of our students, that our worldwide student body is maintained relatively free of world mesmerism, and thereby sin, disease, lack, and other human discords are lessened in their experience. That's the true idea of world work. If I were a teacher in a schoolroom or in a Sunday school, or if I were the minister of a church, that is how I would meditate. In the first place, I would go into meditation because of the class or congregation, and then I would immediately dismiss that from consciousness and rise into the realization that since God is the church consciousness, and God is the consciousness of every individual who constitutes the church, only one law is operating in that classroom or church. The government is on his shoulders. You see how he lifts the whole group? And you must start doing this. I asked a friend of mine once in Oklahoma, "Did you lift the group?" Because that's what I was doing. We were sitting in the audience and there was a speaker coming up to speak, and there was probably 300 people in the audience. And I asked him, "Did you lift up the group?" The only other occasion for a group treatment might be in connection with the armed forces throughout the world. In such cases, no one individual would be singled out, as if there were one truth about one person and a different truth about another. But God would be realized as the consciousness of every one involved in the situation, and this must include the armies of the enemies as well as our own. Did you do that? Did you pray for the enemy after 9/11? We did, here in my house. I don't tell you that to tell you how good I am. I tell you that to tell you I'm practicing this principle the very best I know how. A good general rule to follow is not to attempt to give group treatments except in situations similar to those cited above. The only other time that group healing or the treating of many patients together is advisable is when a practitioner turns to God in a realization of conscious oneness for the sake of communion with God, but without any individual cases first entering thought. He is not dealing specifically with any of these cases, but whoever is reaching out to him will be healed, and perhaps even four or five during the period of meditation. The practitioner is not treating a group of patients. He is consciously one with God, and while he is in communion with God, all those who reach out and touch his consciousness at that moment will find healing. You see what an important word consciousness is? Not only in this chapter, but throughout the writings of the Infinite Way. Have you ever asked yourself, what is the Infinite Way? Is the Infinite Way a set of books, a set of tapes? Is the Infinite Way an office in Arizona or California? Is the Infinite Way a series of lectures? Is it principles that have been passed down to us? What is the Infinite Way? If you study long enough, you'll come to the conclusion the Infinite Way and my consciousness are one. And so the Infinite Way is the consciousness way, the way of consciousness, higher consciousness. From many years of experience, I know that the degree of my upliftment determines the degree of harmony, peace, joy, prosperity, health, and wholeness of those who constitute my practice or student body. In the early years of my practice, I was kept busy during the winter with many calls, sometimes hundreds, for the healing of influenza, colds, and pneumonia. Then, one winter in New England, an experience took place which opened my consciousness to the depth of Jesus' statement, "I and my Father are one." One evening, I left the office after 29 calls had come in during the afternoon from people in different stages of colds, grip, and the flu. The next morning, almost before I was seated in my office, there were 6 more calls. At that particular time, I was very busy, and of course, every chair in my office waiting room was usually occupied, and my appointment book was always filled. On this day, however, when I looked at my appointment book, I found that there were no appointments scheduled for the hour from 1 to 2, and that was something that never before happened to me. Furthermore, I had not consciously or deliberately arranged it that way, so I wondered, what has happened? What does this mean? Then in a flash it came to me. Oh, I didn't do that. I had nothing to do with that. This must have been God's work, and there must be a reason for this. And so I closed the office door, just as if I were with a patient. I sat down and I said, "Father, there is a meaning to this. Let me know what it is." And then I waited in meditation until this came to me. You do not have 35 cases of colds and the flu. You have only one, and that one is the belief in a selfhood apart from God. It is a belief that there are powers operating in consciousness other than God. Can you accept any power outside of God, the one consciousness, the one divine intelligence? Can you acknowledge that there is some power operating outside your own consciousness? Well, that was a new idea. During the afternoon following that revelation, there were no further calls relative to that particular type of problem. Every one, or very nearly every one, of those patients was healed during that hour of realization. Just as soon as the truth of being registered in my consciousness, all these people were released. See? You don't heal people. You release the belief. It was not a matter of giving each one a treatment. It was not a matter of meditating for them or thinking about them. It was a matter of the truth of being registering in my consciousness, and then everyone who had brought himself to my consciousness was healed. If I am entertaining the truth of being, any one, any 35, or any 300 who come to my consciousness partake of the nature of the truth operating in that consciousness. So again, do you see how important that word is, consciousness? You see how important it is to live in a consciousness that has been raised out of the tomb of mortal thinking into the presence of God? So he says, that is the way to treat. That is how to go about the world being a blessing and a benediction. You do not treat people, and you do not try to realize the Christ in them. you realize the Christ as the only being. Realize the Christ. Feel the Christ. Feel the warmth of love within your own being. Many of those you are silently blessing will have healings. And some of them will find their way to truth because you will have opened up the spiritual center in them, which heretofore had not been open. I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. And I, if I be lifted up, means the conscious awareness of Christ in your consciousness is lifting up the I, lifting up the Christ, lifting up consciousness. And so, again, Joel's right when he says consciousness is the most important word in the Infinite Way writings. But now make it your own. What is consciousness? Have you ever asked yourself, what is consciousness? I did. And I came to the conclusion, consciousness is conscious awareness. Whatever I am aware of will manifest in my experience and in anyone reaching out to me. Now, once upon a time, I've told this story before, once upon a time, many, many years ago, I needed a car up here in the mountains. So I did a little research, and at the time, the Subaru Outback was pretty good. It was all-wheel drive all the time, and supposed to be good in the snow. So I had never seen them. I'd never been inside of one. And I took a test drive, and I liked it, and I bought it. And I brought it home, brand new Subaru Outback. And I loved that thing. But something happened. A week after I purchased it, I drove to the supermarket, and I parked in the parking lot, get ready to go in and get some groceries. And as I looked around the parking lot, hey, there's another Subaru. There's another one. And then just then one went driving down the street. There's another one. You see, they had always been there. But I had not been consciously aware. Once I bought a Subaru Outback, and it was in my consciousness, I began to see them everywhere. I mean everywhere. So, consciousness to me means conscious awareness. Once I am consciously aware of something, it expresses, it manifests, it demonstrates itself. Whether that's the Subaru, or whether that's the presence of God. When in my meditation I am consciously aware of God, and I feel that inner movement, I know that God has taken over, and I say, thank you, Father. Ah, thank you. And I am released. And I stand there, I sit there, until the feeling moves on. I find scripture is correct when it says it's like the wind. You don't know how it got there or where it's going. So is everyone that's born of the Spirit. So I feel it, and I rest in it, and I wait. And when it subsides, I open my eyes, and I go about my business. But anybody reaching out to that consciousness, when I'm in the middle of it, and it's in the middle of me, they partake of it. It demonstrates itself as my experience and those turning to me. So it all comes down to consciousness, to infinite God consciousness, which operates at a moment ye think not. At a moment ye think not, behold, I am come. Consciousness, infinite God consciousness, that is what I am. Okay, we finished up a little early. Let's be still for a minute and see if there's anything else. Well, you say, what happens if there are four requests for help at the same time? Well, it's not the words you know about each individual or even each individual situation. It's not the words you know. It's your conscious awareness of the living God. And you can have that without words. You can have that without thoughts. You can just step into or lean back into that sea of spirit. Okay. Now, is there any truth about Putin? Is there any truth about Biden? Is there any truth about Trump? Is there any truth about the Ukraine leader? No. No, there is no truth about any of these persons, these personas, these masks. The only truth there is the truth about infinite individual consciousness. So you don't treat a person, you don't treat a condition. You treat the belief in a self apart from God. There isn't one. You treat the truth. Infinite divine consciousness is what I am. And I am everywhere. And I am everyone. Within all things I am. Look up into the heavens to the farthest star. And even beyond that I am. Look down into planet Earth. Way into the center where the core is millions of degrees or hundreds of thousands of degrees. And there I am. I am the movement of the universe. And I am behind the universe. And I am throughout the universe. And I am your infinite consciousness. Rest back. Rest back. Let me take over. I live, yet not I. Christ, this divine consciousness, liveth my life. And so be at peace. Be at peace. I am come. Thank you, everyone. Sorry the talk is so short. All of you fathers out there, I wish you a wonderful, peace-filled, happy Father's Day. And thank you for drawing this out, and God bless. God bless us one and all.